front of me, and I'm surprised again and again at just how relevant these texts are that we've been digging through and discovering. So last week, just by way of reminder, it was a lesson about the home and how that kind of really boils down to the presence of God in our home is what makes all the difference. He is our greatest inheritance. And so this morning I want to talk about another way that we honor and remember the Lord our God, and that is through our stewardship and through our giving. A person who gives to the Lord and gives for the needs of other people is a person who remembers everything they have is a gift from God. It's all from Him. How many of you have some anxiety over your finances? Don't raise your hands. And there's a lot of different root causes for financial stress or financial anxiety. But this is going to sound harsh, but I think that's okay. Let it be harsh. And if it strikes you, ask the question, why does this strike me the way it does? A lot of you have anxiety over your finances. Save. You don't give. You have not learned to live within your means and be content. You are used to instant gratification. A fool and his money are easily parted. This world is full of people who are constantly trading their birthright and their inheritance for a bowl of lentil soup. It wasn't just a problem in the Old Testament. Here's the thing. The Lord can help you. The Lord can help you do better with this. But when the Lord is not the priority of your life, especially in things like your finances, when the Lord is not the Lord of your finances, stress and anxiety are always going to be an issue with you. You know who doesn't feel financial stress and anxiety? At least not the same way. People who are generous. People who have made generosity to the Lord and to others, they've made that into a way of life. Well, you may be thinking, well, of course, they're retired now, they have a pension, they have the luxury to give this way, they have more to give. Well, how did they get more to give? I'm not talking about a health and wealth gospel, but there is a reality of the generosity of God in the Scriptures. And those who have learned to be faithful with little, they will learn how to be faithful with much as well. Here's what Jesus has to say about some of this. If you are faithful in little things, you will be faithful in large ones. But if you are dishonest in little things, you won't be honest with greater responsibilities. And if you are untrustworthy about worldly wealth, who will trust you with the true riches of heaven? See, I think that the most generous people among us are people who have learned to give to God even when it was hard. They have learned frugality. They have learned to do more with less. They have learned contentment for the sake of the gospel. They have learned how to slowly and consistently save over long periods of time. They have learned to be good stewards. They have learned what it feels like to give sacrificially, even when it hurts, all for the sake of honoring the Lord their God. This is just a Calvin thing, but I think it's true. And if you don't agree with me on this, hey, that's okay. I'm a guy, I get things wrong all the time. But I think it's true. If you haven't learned to give to the Lord when it's hard, you won't give to Him when it's easy. If you make excuses now, you're going to make excuses then as well. Greed will eat up the difference of whatever that is. But from the time of Moses writing the book of Deuteronomy, all the way to the disciples of Jesus, which is us in the church today, sacrificial giving and generosity has always been built in to what it means to be the people of God. We are a people who are called to give for a purpose, to honor the Lord our God and to help enable His good works to continue in this world today. Remember the Levitical priests, that is, the whole tribe of Levi, that they will receive no allotment of land among the other tribes in Israel. Instead, the priests and Levites will eat from the special gifts given to the Lord, for that is their share. They will have no land of their own among the Israelites. The Lord Himself is their special possession, just as He promised them. These are the parts the priests may claim as their own share from the cattle, sheep, and goats that the people bring as offerings: the shoulder, the cheeks, and the stomach. You must also give to the priest the first share of the grain, the new wine, the olive oil, and the wool at shearing time. For the Lord your God chose the tribe of Levi out of all your tribes to minister in the Lord's name forever. Suppose a Levite chooses to move from his town in Israel, wherever he is living, to a place the Lord chooses for worship. He may minister there in the name of the Lord his God, just like his fellow Levites who are serving the Lord there, and he may eat his share of the sacrifices and offerings, even if he also receives support from his family. So a couple things I want to point out from these texts in Deuteronomy. First, I'd like to thank you, the church, for not paying my salary in cow stomachs and goat cheeks and the like. But I want to second point out, notice that the Lord doesn't give all of the people in Israel the same opportunities. The promised land doesn't look the same for all of them. The guarantee of the Christian life is not that you're going to make $1 million in the bank. It's going to look different for different people. The Levites are dependent on God, and they're dependent on the gifts of the other 11 tribes of Israel. And if the other 11 tribes decide, yeah, I'm not really feeling it, it's the Levites and the vulnerable people who are going to suffer, who will not have a choice in the matter. Yeah, he's agreeing with me. So as a minister of the gospel and as a missionary, Alicia and I, for the majority of our lives, have made our living on the gifts that other Christians have given us. And so in some small way, I maybe can speak to this. I can speak to the position of dependence that God put the Levites in. It is a place of privilege. But ministry is also a vocation, I would say, that is precarious in ways that other jobs may not be. I know what it's like to be blessed more than I deserve, and I know something about having to make do without and go without because of the stinginess of other Christians. I know what it's like to be treated as a true brother and partner in the gospel, and I know what it's like to have other Christians treat me like a hireling. Clean up this mess. When people are happy with you, they share that with you. When people are upset about something, they're going to share that with you as well. You'll definitely hear about it. As a minister of the gospel, you're going to be honored more than you deserve, because they're really honoring the Lord their God, the Lord your God. And as a minister of the gospel, there will be times when you're shamed. You're shamed by other Christians. You get paid for doing that? We do all those same things for free because we love the Lord. You really don't know what it's like to work in the real world. You don't really have to work as hard as we do. You know, sometimes this is just words that come out, and it's not meant to be hurtful, but sometimes there's a kind of blindness and resentment that can almost shame. It's meant to shame another person. Let me just also say that this church has taken really good care of Alicia and I. You guys have been so generous with us, and it is a privilege and honor. You have treated me with respect. This eldership has honored and treated me with respect. I feel like a real partner, and I feel like I get to come to work with my best friends. It's so fun. I love it. A whole church of people who wear black to celebrate my 50th birthday. Well, we have certain roles among us that have inherent blessings and also inherent difficulties. It is sometimes there's difficulties that are associated being a full-time preacher of the a full-time minister, youth ministry, campus ministry, any kind of ministry work. There are things that are difficult about that. Our elders catch a lot of flack, and there's a lot of hassle and heartache that's associated with taking on that role and responsibility. Our church secretary deals with, she hears the stuff that everyone's afraid to maybe say to my face, and she has to wade in that. You need to be aware of that and be careful about that. Our Sunday school teachers, all of those who have a role in the work here, in some ways you get to see the sausage being made. And when the sausage is made, it's not a very pretty process sometimes. And as difficult as our roles may be, I want you to know that it's all worth it. It's all worth it. And it's not, when you make a decision to honor the Lord your God and go into some kind of full-time service, as difficult as it is, it's not just kind of worth it. It's deal of a lifetime kind of worth it. It's Mega Millions jackpot kind of worth it, like treasure hidden in a field and a pearl of great price kind of worth it. That's what I think. And you learn to depend on people in a different way. But really, this is the heart of not just ministers of the gospel, but this is the heart that should be in all of us who are disciples of Jesus. The Lord himself is their special possession, just as he promised. Now let's take a look at the way the first fruits offering and the tithe offering worked in ancient Israel. When you enter the land the Lord your God is giving you as a special possession, and you have conquered it and settled there, put some of the first produce from each crop you harvest into a basket and bring it to the designated place of worship, the place the Lord your God chooses for his name to be honored. You must then say in the presence of the Lord your God, "And now, O Lord, I have brought you the first portion of the harvest and that you have given me from the ground," and then place the produce before the Lord your God and bow down and worship before him. That's what they're called to do. Afterward, you may go and celebrate because of all the good things the Lord your God has given to you and to your household. Remember to include the Levites and the foreigners living among you in the celebration. So first notice, What is the portion that's dedicated to the Lord? First fruits. The Lord's portion comes off the top. You don't keep it all and wait and see how much is left over and then give that leftover portion. Second, and this is amazing to me, what does the Lord do with the offering that he receives from you? He gives most of it back so that you can go feast and celebrate. It's party time with God picking up the bill and paying for the expenses. Wait, what? I think that's right. God is giving back your offering for you to celebrate extravagantly. That is what's happening in Deuteronomy here. Now, when the Lord your God blesses you with a good harvest, the place of worship he chooses for his name to be honored might be too far for you to bring the tithe. If so, you may sell the tithe portion of your crops and herds, put the money in a pouch, and go to the place the Lord your God has chosen. When you arrive, you may use the money to buy any kind of food you want, cattle, sheep, goats, wine, or other alcoholic drink, and then feast there in the presence of the Lord your God and celebrate with your household. What is happening here? Not only is God, does he pick up the tab for your feasting and your celebration, he is using his portion to send you on a family vacation everywhere so that you can eat out and eat the best stuff and just have a ball doing it. And you worship and you celebrate and you feast. God knows the importance of celebration. But this isn't the only thing he commands you to do with the offering given to him. Every third year, you must offer a special tithe of your crops. And this year of the special tithe, you must give your tithes to the Levites, foreigners, orphans, and widows so that they will have enough to eat in your towns. Or from chapter 14. And do not neglect the Levites in your town, for they will receive no allotment of land among you. At the end of every third year, bring the entire tithe of that year's harvest and store it in the nearest town. Give it to the Levites, who will receive no allotment of land among you, as well as to the foreigners living among you, to the orphans and to the widows in your towns, so they can eat and be satisfied. Then the Lord your God will bless you in all your work. So what is God doing with these offerings that are given to him? So every 2 years, if it is far from the place that he chooses for his name to be honored, he sends you on all expenses paid family vacation to celebrate and to worship. And you do that for 2 years, just going and having a ball, worshiping the Lord your God and remembering his goodness and generosity to you. And then in that third year, you don't celebrate. You give it to God's people and the most vulnerable people so that they can celebrate. So that's in year three, foreigners, orphans, and widows, together with the Levites, they receive that offering. So I might not have this right, and I'm just looking through the window of Deuteronomy, but this is what it looks like to me. Year one, vacation with God, feasting, celebration. But you're also supposed to invite the poor, the Levites, the foreigners, to share in your feast. Year two, feasting and celebration. Year three, you're giving the poorest of the poor. You're giving that full portion to those who don't have an inheritance the same way you do, those full-time workers for the Lord. Year four, party time again, vacation time with God again. Year five, feasting and celebration. Year six, God's people, the poor, the vulnerable. And then year seven, Jubilee. Debts forgiven, slaves set free. Leviticus, I think 25, talks about rest for the land. So it's a seven-year cycle. 7 days of creation. 7 days of the week with the Sabbath day of rest. So that story is a story and a part of the giving story of Israel as well. You can check me on that, but I think that this stands up. Just if you read through all of these relevant verses in Deuteronomy. Now here's the thing. You may think that this sermon this morning is about another preacher asking you to give more money. Shocker. I don't typically do this and hit this very hard. But really, as I look at these texts on the responsibility the 11 tribes have when they receive their inheritance to take care of the tribe of Levi, to take care of the foreigner, to take care of the widow, to take care of the orphan, this really isn't a sermon on giving as much as it is a sermon on stewardship and learning contentment in the Lord. Content to receive whatever it is that is your meant to receive from God. Because here's the thing. As Christians, as followers of Jesus, you are both the landowner and the Levite. As Christians, you receive the inheritance of the promised land, and you receive the inheritance of the priests and Levites. You get the fat of the land, and you get the Lord your God himself as your special possession. Because you are a chosen people. You, church, are a royal priesthood. You are a holy nation. You are God's very own possession. As a result, you can show others the goodness of God, for he called you out of the darkness and into his wonderful light. That's the NLT version of 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9. As Christians, we are a priesthood. And so we model what joyful dependence on God looks like to the world around us. What does it mean to joyfully depend on the Lord? To wait on the Lord? To receive from the Lord? So I think the call of this, and reading through this high call that we read about in Deuteronomy, as Christians, we need to understand that we are called to use our resources differently. Our lives are supposed to be more than living lavishly and extravagantly. Our resources entrusted to us, each one of you, your paycheck, your Social Security, your pension, whatever it looks like, it's meant to be for more than just your personal comfort and your personal enjoyment. Your money spending shouldn't be a reflection of your own vanity and selfishness. Frugality for the sake of generosity. Simplicity for the sake of clarity. Buying things of durability and quality to stand against the tide of constant consumption and a throwaway culture. We think about and we use our resources differently to honor the Lord our God. That is our call. So let me summarize the sermon in a nutshell for you. Just as the Levitical priests modeled contentment with God as their inheritance, so does the priesthood of all believers model joyful contentment with lives of deprivation and dependence on the Lord. It's not all doom and gloom, but this is meant to be a realization that as disciples of Jesus, we are playing a different game than whoever dies with the most toys wins. That's not our game. When you choose Christ, you have given up playing the world's games by the world's rules. Especially, I think, when it comes to issues of money and the way we use our resources. Point two, the tribe of Levi's exclusion from possession of a plot of land served as a model to all of Israel to recognize that God's presence is the true gift and the true inheritance. Should that not be true of us also, brothers and sisters? Even more so, joyful dependence on God for all his generosity to us, to model what contentment with godliness looks like, to tighten the belt for the sake of the good of other people, for the works of the kingdom, to take care of the poor and needy among us. The Levites taught Israel to care for and support God's full-time servants. And the Levites taught Israel to generously care for the most vulnerable peoples of the society around them. These are all lessons that translate from Old Testament to New Testament. First Timothy, Paul says these words. Jonathan, you can come up. This is the close of the sermon right here. True godliness with contentment is itself great wealth. After all, we brought nothing with us when we came into the world, and we can't take anything with us when we leave. Is this true? I showed up naked. You know, I don't want a viewing, you know. And if I had one, I would want clothes on, but we're not taking anything with us. And our true inheritance is the Lord God himself. We get to enjoy the fat of the land. We really do. Who has been blessed more than people in this country in this day and age? And yet with that privilege comes responsibility. And our true inheritance and destiny is that we get to receive the Lord our God as our portion and inheritance. And there is always a sense that we who as Christians and followers of Jesus, we don't live as settlers and permanent residences. This is our permanent residence. This is all there is. We're pilgrims. Even if you've owned your home for 40 years, you're a pilgrim if you belong to Jesus Christ. And the way we use our resources ought to reflect that pilgrim spirit as we joyfully go through this world. Yes, the Lord gives us a lot to celebrate. Yes, the Lord gives us the ability to share. So our invitation today, if you need the prayers of this church or to put the Lord on in baptism, if there's some way that I can help you or this congregation can help you, you can find me up front here. And we'll go ahead and stand and sing an invitation song together.